And welcome once again to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm happy to be here. The show focuses on authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and business of writing. And today we have Lori Harper of Sebastian Agency. She's been an agent for 17 years, most of those in San Francisco, but now in St. Paul, Minnesota. She represents mostly nonfiction clients across a broad spectrum and a few novelists such as Peter Beagle and Daryl Brock. She's also the author of a biography of Don Sherwood, legendary radio disc jockey, and so she's been on the writer's side of the desk as well. And she's had a regional publishing company in San Francisco for a few years. Hi, Lori.
Well, hello there.
Great to talk to you again.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now tell me, agenting, is this something you always sort of had in the back of your mind, or when you were
no.
writing, were you really, you know, just never thinking it would ever go this way?
It never occurred to me, and I think for most agents, it's very rare that an agent knew they were going to be one. We were actually on our way somewhere else. And then this happened, and it's really interesting how everybody got into it, because no stories are alike.
Mm-hmm.
But I was actually in banking for many years, so I was on the business, finance, sort of pre-law end of things. And then when I blew out of banking, which was a smart thing to do, I think I was 27 or something, I said, okay, enough of this. Then it was my husband who said, well, what do you really want to do? And I said, oh, and I can't really explain this, but I wanted to have a publishing company. Even though I really didn't know what that was, I actually knew very little about that. And he said, that's what you should do, which was an incredible luxury. So it took me about a year to figure out what I was going to do on that small press regional thing, but it ended up being in gift books, which was really fun. But the truth is, I lasted 3 years and just said, I'm way too young to feel this old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you're wearing all the hats. You can't really get out of your own way. I mean, unless somebody comes along with millions of dollars saying, oh, we'd just love to back you.
Yeah.
You know, unless somebody's buying you out. So after about the third year, I just said, oh, okay, this is not it. But I did love publishing, and I loved all the people in publishing. That's what I really loved, no matter who I was working with, whether it was booksellers, distributors, authors, graphic artists, contract people. I just loved working with everybody in publishing, and certainly I just loved the books. So then it was a fluke, because someone referred this author to me saying, well, can you help this author out? And I had authors under contract that I knew I was now not going to publish. And I felt guilty. Sure guilt. I really couldn't just call them up one day and say, you know what, I changed my mind. I'm just too tired. And so I thought my only clean way out of this is to find them their next publisher, and then they won't care that I've done this. And so it's one of those great things when you don't know what you're doing, you'll do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that LMP, Literary Marketplace, and I just started calling up, like, an editor at Warner, and, someone else at Simon & Schuster, and I did actually know who I thought should do these books, and I just called them up, and I said, well, I was going to publish this book, but now I can't, and I think you should. And it was so weird, because for, like, 3 days, all anybody would say is, well, are you the agent? And which I didn't really know what that was, but I said, no, I'm a small press publisher, and I go through it, and they didn't really want to talk to me. So finally, like the third day, I just said yes. And then everything went, oh, well, I'd love to see it. And the doors flew open, and I thought, what a magic little word.
That's interesting.
And so I ran back to my bookseller friends and said, what is that exactly? They said, you said yes? I said, well, how bad could it be? Whatever it is, I probably know it. And so that's really how I ended up doing it. And I was just going to help, you know, 3 or 4 people and get them all situated. And I, you know, I bought the book everybody else probably buys, you know, How to Negotiate a Book Contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I read through that, and I thought, well, this makes a lot of sense, because I actually do like contracts, and I do like negotiating. And so that worked really well. And I negotiated my first deal with Warner, and I had that book sitting in front of me. Fortunately, that's a really good book. And so even now, you know, all these years later, I look back and say, that wasn't the worst contract you could have done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now, of course, I know a whole lot more. But it was so perfect. It was like walking into that perfect place for you, and you suddenly go, oh, this is it. Who would have guessed? I absolutely thrived immediately on being in the middle, doing that matchmaking, really negotiating all, you know, the contracts and working through the process with the author. And because I'd been on several sides and putting that all together in that way, I mean, I hadn't run a bookstore, but I had done a lot of other things. And so I just knew right away the first year with those first authors that this is it. This is so perfect for me, and I feel like I can make a difference, and it's really fun and challenging. No 2 days are alike. You're always learning something new. And then I was off and running. So you go from, okay, you have 4 authors, to you have 10 authors, to you have 20 authors, to you have 30 authors, and just sort of goes from there.
So 17 years now, recently you moved to St. Paul.
Yes.
And now what is the difference then from being in San Francisco to being in St. Paul, and how does that affect being an agent, or does it? Because I would imagine a lot happens via the internet now.
Well, it does, and for many, many years, agents have been so spread out, I mean, easily since I've been in it. They've been all over the place, but I would say in the last 10 years, certainly much more so, where they really aren't centered in New York. They are all over the place. And so there's no prejudice, you know, from New York about that. The only thing is, whether you're building your agency from San Francisco or St. Paul or wherever, what it really means is you do have to go to New York a lot. You have to go meet with these editors wherever they are enough that you are cultivating and building that relationship with them. So they do have to see you enough until you've worked together enough, you know, that then phone, fax, if they see you once a year, it's fine because you're talking all the time anyway. So I would have to say that I wouldn't want to launch or try to build an agency from St. Paul. That would have been quite challenging. In San Francisco, because it's a major city, and whether I would say the major cities that everybody would tend to go to are going to be, you know, New York, L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, possibly Seattle, you know. And those are natural places, cosmopolitan places, that authors would tend to look for agents. And so it was very helpful to me in building the agency in San Francisco. But by the time I moved here 2 years ago, I have my established client list.
Mm-hmm.
And almost everyone who comes to me is on a referral. And so even though I still have a slush pile like every other agent, you know, where authors will just query everybody in the country, basically. I'm always suspicious of that because, of course, Sebastian Agency is in the S's. And I'm thinking, if this person is querying me, unknown to anybody, is just suddenly querying S's, I wonder what they've been through to this point. I'm a little suspicious.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, are you in Jeff Herman's book where it talks about your hobbies and all that?
Yes, yes. You know, that is, I really do think it's the best resource for any writer because that questionnaire is so thorough.
Mm-hmm.
And because you can see an agent's, you know, recent sales, and when you, just from a sensibility standpoint, look and say, okay, this is what they've been selling. This was their background. Oh, look at their hobbies and interests. When you put all that together, you have a very accurate sense of that agent. And I think you can just make a much better match.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the only one I recommend.
Interesting.
Because all the other listings really are just listings. They're completely generic. It doesn't really tell you anything. You would have no more sense of one from the other, no matter how many you read. You're still taking a stab in the dark. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the types of things that Jeff Herman's listing asks, then I think it's still just stabbing in the dark.
Mm-hmm. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM in Irvine, California. My guest is literary agent Lori Harper. What about hobbies? Has anybody ever queried you and really, you know, pointed out a hobby that you have as what they're writing about?
They haven't, because mine are just pretty generic. But I think for agents who say that their hobby is art, that's something that an author could specifically want to target for a reason,
mm-hmm.
you know, or they collect something and then an author would know, oh, that's perfect. Then he's going to really understand what I'm saying.
Sure.
Mine are just not that, not that interesting. But no, it's much more common that an author from the Jeff Herman book would have seen sales in a certain category and will have gone to look at that book and then say, okay, I see, you know, you handled so-and-so and you sold this book here and you have I get a lot of business books because I have the business and finance background, and so that was a natural, that was pretty obvious. And it's true that some of them will select me specifically and say, I think you're the only one who's going to actually get what I'm about to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's true. And those are the ways you can make the matches. And I think even in the fiction, you know, when you start looking through, if an agent just says, I handle fiction, that doesn't help you very much.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at their sales and you see that, oh, it's very heavy on thrillers or very heavy on the romance or on mysteries, or they specialize in, you know, fantasy and science fiction. Now you can start to track down some of those authors, and you're going to get a very, very accurate sense of whether your writing and what you're setting out to accomplish is really going to fit. Is that agent really bringing something that's going to help you? You know, I get queried for fiction, in spite of my listing, that really shows a dominant strength in nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I wanted to ask how you judge what material you want to represent. Is it what you think you can sell? Is it just simply what you like and are interested in?
I would say in the early years, it was what interested me and where I could really say, this has to be published. I really believe this just has to be published. Unfortunately, I was getting poorer and poorer. And so at a certain point, you say, okay, it's probably smarter to be selling what the publishers actually want to publish.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably smarter. So then you go the other way, and you just start tracking down and looking for things that those particular editors want, which is very difficult to match it that way. Then it ends up coming back into the middle where it's a combination. When I start working with an author, it is now usually a combination of course, I really do like what they're doing, and I like that author. I respect and really like that author and think their ideas are good, that they're a good thinker, and that they really have a good grasp on what they're setting out to do. But also, I do believe there is a place in the marketplace. You know, there's a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if I get top-heavy in a category, I have too many business books, I have too many psychology, I have too many health, it can happen that my authors all get going in certain tracks and I just get top-heavy in that, then I'm intentionally just not going to take any more because I need to balance my list too, like a publisher balances their list. I can't really just get sidetracked into one category and get typecast there, or I'm never going to see the other things. So I'm trying to stay a generalist, and I will manage my client list that way. Year to year, that will change. And as as authors refer other authors to me, and I'm trying to both give them ideas of where I think it's smart for them to go. We're working book to book, year to year, and we're trying to have a strategy going forward. That's going to be a combination of me giving them market information and them following their own nose of where they need to go and telling me the direction that their writing just has to go. And then we're putting that together all the time. So I can end up in categories and areas that I didn't plan to be.
Yes.
Because I differentiate agents by there are deal makers and then there are authors' representatives. And the deal makers are predominantly, they think their only job is get you a contract, they negotiate it, they collect the money, bam, they're done. And anything else that happens is between you and your publisher.
Mm-hmm.
That's the deal maker agent. And then for the majority of us, we actually are author representatives. And so we are working longer term with our authors, and we're evolving together. We're coming up with goals, and we're trying to figure out logical steps to reach that, and we're working towards something for that author. It goes over many years, many books. It can take some twists and turns. I had one author who we're going one direction, and she had said to me, I absolutely, categorically never want to do those cute little gift book things. I just don't want to. So don't try to get me there. And wouldn't you know, the very first trip to New York seeing the editors, where I'm, you know, presenting her materials on the other book, which was in more the psychology area, of course, what did the editor say? You know what? She's perfect for these quote books. And I thought, oh, no, oh, no. So I came back and I said, well, the good news is, Dell's really interested in you. The bad news is it's for a different book, and it's exactly the one you don't want to write. And, of course, she said, okay, it's only a matter of money. And here we are, like 5 years later, that book has sold 170,000 copies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and it was exactly the book she said, I absolutely do not want to write these. And she's ended up, you know, writing 5 or 6 of these gift books that is exactly what she hated. And it's doing really well. So she said, okay, I changed my mind.
That's funny.
This can happen where you just get something just gets thrown at you, or the editor has some idea in the middle of this conversation, and off you go in a different direction. And I think a lot of authors' careers are look like that. There were a lot of unexpected things. There were books that they didn't think they'd ever write that they did. There were ones that they're dying to write that they still haven't. And that's pretty much how we work year in and year out. We're following paths.
Yes.
And, of course, that's what's so interesting. I wouldn't have stayed an agent if this were just put a contract together.
Mm-hmm.
That would absolutely not have held my interest. It's working with the author. It's working with the editors. It's all the relationships. And it is directing it. It's having plans, having strategies, having goals.
You are listening to Writers on Writing, and my guest is Lori Harper, who is an agent out of St. Paul, Minnesota. Her agency is Sebastian Agency. So what if your client then, a longtime client, is writing a book that you feel you can't get behind? Say it's a form of fiction. Oh, I don't know.
Or more typically, it's a children's book all of a sudden. Yes.
Is that typical?
Yeah, for me it is. It's like a curse. Every single time everything is going fine, they go, you know what, I have this children's book I need to write. Because, of course, I don't sell children's books.
Mm-hmm.
So
what happens? Do they get another agent for that book only? Or what do you do?
First, I look at it just to see what it is they're thinking, and get a feel for that. And if I do think it's a really good idea, but I'm not going to be effective, then I give them, you know, I give them the name of children's book agents who I know are good, and I just say, well, let's work this out, where if you're going to do more than one children's book, then they should represent you, and you'll have two agents. They'll be doing the children's, and I'll be doing the adult.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually works out. And if it's just a single book thing, I would have to say most often they decide not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there isn't really any good reason to do it then. If it's just one singular book, I mean, you're not going to get anywhere with that.
Hmm.
And if it's, I'm working with them in the nonfiction and then they have a novel, I have actually this year taken an author, I did take the novel, even though I warned him, I said, this is not absolutely my forte. However, I do know the editors who buy this, and it is fabulous, and I actually couldn't resist. It was so well written, and it was such a wonderful story, I had to take it. Had I looked at that and said, uh-oh, I really can't get involved here, then I would have certainly referred him to other strong fiction agents, and we work it out. I end up doing a lot of, there's all kinds of co-agenting. There are times when we pass stuff between us agents, you know, for no piece of the action. We're just doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I just call up another agent or they call me up and we just simply share our ideas. We don't even get involved as a co-agent. We just give each other the information because we're very collegial. And so there are a number of ways to go, but there are authors who could conceivably have three different agents all at the same time. Mm-hmm. As long as the agents all know about each other and we're all kept up to date on what's going on, it's very workable.
Well, for that first-time author, is it important for them to get that first book out, even if it means going with a teensy publisher that may mean not being reviewed? Is it important just to get that book out? Or, you know, if you find the only way you're going to do anything with this is do a small publisher, maybe to wait until they have something else out so that, you know, they get a larger publisher or more recognition? Or
I think it would, if that book is really an important book to them. This is not one that they were just like learning on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, I wrote that one, but now I really understand what it's about, so now I'll write a better one. If the one they wrote wasn't just training, but it was seriously the book they did set out to write, and now for everything that they know, this is really ready, and an agent isn't prepared to take it on, then I absolutely do think that going with a small press, but a small press that has distribution, basic distribution, is constructive and it's productive, because that author needs to show that they have learned the whole process, that they know how to go out and at least do basic marketing and basic promotion for the book, you have to learn somehow, and you learn by doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can, you know, get that book out, do all the creative marketing ideas they can think of, and at the same time maybe start cultivating writing for some magazines and getting some other things published. You're trying to build something for leverage. And the book with a small press doesn't have to sell, you know, 50,000 copies to impress anyone. The major houses will certainly take into account who the publisher was who had it, because they know about them. So if someone is with a smaller press and with their first book they sold, 4,500 copies over a few years, but it did respectable, you know, it was respectable, then with the next one, if it is as strong or stronger, you do have more leverage to go again to the agents, to go again, you know, to the bigger houses. And some authors really decide to stay with that particular independent for two or three books because it's really working and they do a good job. Then they'll wait two or three books to get more leverage and try to get some of the subsidiary rights licensing, try to get some foreign sales for that book, try to get a book on tape, just any of the licensing to help leverage it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has to be better than just putting a manuscript on the shelf and saying, oh, well, that didn't work.
Yes.
Because you're not learning and you're not progressing. You're not taking the steps. And so much happens in the doing. You know, you'll meet other people who will open up another door for you. You never know what opportunities are actually coming.
Mm-hmm.
But you're only going to find them in the doing. Mm-hmm. So I never think someone should just say, oh, forget that, and stick it on the shelf, unless it really was a throwaway book.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that we do just for training, and then we know we're doing it for training.
Yes. All right, well, we're going to take an extremely short break because we need to end early today because we have a basketball game, I believe, going on. So I'm going to just leave you all for a few seconds. Be right back with more Lori Harper. Please stay tuned.
This isn't sometimes, this is always. This isn't maybe, this is. This is love, the real beginning of forever. It isn't just midsummer madness, a passing glow. I knew it on the night we met.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. And my guest today is Lori Harper of Sebastian Agency in St. Paul, Minnesota. Lori, I'm curious about rejections and sort of connected with something you were talking about in terms of, is it a throwaway book? Is it something that the author learned from and perhaps should put away? You know, rejection letters come in so many different forms, and one form that all authors or wannabe authors hate is the form rejection letter.
Exactly.
With no note or anything. And I guess, you know, when somebody is sending out a first book, whether it be a first novel or a book proposal for a first nonfiction book, how can they know when it is time to put it away? If they get a certain number of form rejections, if what? You know?
Well, there's certainly, you know, was debate, and I remember in the beginning, I thought it was just terrible for, you know, to ever send a form letter, but that was before the volume got, you know, unbearable. And really, we do all resort to the form letter because we simply cannot physically take the time to comment on every single one. If you're lucky, then someone writes a note across it because they do have an additional comment. Like I frequently have an additional comment to make to the author, even though I'm declining it. I might say, you know, this is a really well done proposal, and you need to not make any changes. This is a good proposal. I'm just not the right one for it, but continue with this because it's really well done. I want them to know that. You know, other times I really don't have a comment. I just look at it and I just think, I can't care. It's as simple as that. But at a certain point, and I think most agents would agree, at a certain point, if you've gotten 35 or 40 rejections and they were carefully targeted queries, you really weren't just throwing it out A to Z against the wall. You had carefully selected those people, and those people all turned it down. Then that there is an answer there, and the answer is this does not work from a marketing standpoint right now, and you do need to go figure out why. It's not really the agent's job to critique the package. When you send something to the agent, you're, no matter how you phrase it, what you're asking is, would you represent me? Can you sell this? And the answer was no. So since we aren't in the business of critiquing things, then you need to go to a freelance editor or a publishing marketing consultant, not editorial services.
Plus, as say an AAR agent could never take money to critique something.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
What about the fee-charging agents? What do you think about all that? Agents that you find in the second half of the Literary Agent's Guide that charge to read material?
I think the only reason to pay them to critique it is if they were a former editor at a publishing house and are now agenting. There are certain agents I would certainly pay because it was their background. That is what they published. And so they bring a very particular expertise, and I would pay them if it was reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't pay an agent who had some other background and is now agenting saying, I will, you know, send me $100 and I'll critique this, because there's no common sense to that. What's the basis that that person could give you a critique? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think selectively you might choose to pay. But that's the key word, is to be selective based on their background.
Right.
And there's another thing that I wanted to bring up about the e-publishing.
Yeah.
Because it goes sort of hand in glove with the self-publishing versus small press, and isn't it better at a certain point just to go online and publish the e-book to get going? Unlike publishing with a small press that's established, the e-book isn't actually going to prove much of anything unless you have an incredible marketing strategy. The only people that I've seen really succeed with that were consultants of some sort, where they have a way to generate constant orders for their book because they're in front of people speaking or working in groups of 100 at a time. They have the ability themselves, without any other marketing, to generate those sales. But the average writer doesn't. And certainly for fiction, I mean, how far can you get if you're literally going out promoting this and selling, you know, 5 books at a time? You just can't amass anything because people can't go browse the book. It's not in the bookstore. They can't go look at it. They can't be made aware of it short of someone directly telling them about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you're prepared to do an astonishing amount, like 7 days a week, for many, many months on end, online, finding any number of ways to tell people and engage people into going to look at your book and buying it, it's going to be a whole lot of work for really small results.
Yes.
And it's we've got ebook, you know, e-publishing things that are just crashing every day right now. They're just disappearing. And so it's a crazy market, and I wouldn't trust it right now.
Mm.
And so I don't advise that.
You're listening to Writers on Writing, and my guest is Lori Harper of Sebastian Agency in St. Paul, Minnesota. Probably the other thing, too, about e-publishing is that it most likely will not get reviewed, and so there won't be that sort of marketing, you know, generating more sales. It'll just be there. So you can say you have a book, but
yeah,
okay.
Unless you can link somehow to a bunch of very targeted websites that are on your topic, that where they're actually going to be doing some of your marketing. They're going to generate people to you. And then you have it on Amazon, and you have it on Barnes and Noble online, and you have to go kind of link crazy to get at people any number of ways. But you won't have the review press driving it. You won't have newspapers, you know, doing feature articles outside of your hometown, possibly, and you just don't have a way to amass anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's deceptive, and because it's affordable, you actually do get to have a printed book in your hand. But thinking, what will you do with it when you have one in your hand? is daunting.
Right. Right.
So.
Well, what is the ideal submission for you? How do you like to receive material or make contact with an author or would-be author about a project? What is the best way for that to happen?
Well,
do you like query letters?
I still prefer a query letter, and, you know, for a nonfiction proposal, I think it's very smart to include at least the table of contents, if not just include the outline and the proposal parts that have, you know, the positioning for this book, the things that we're really all concerned about. Where does this book belong? What is, you know, what's going on in that market? What's your competitive book? I know that a lot of listings from agents say just send a query letter. And I don't really care if the author wants to send me more to look at, because if I'm interested, I would rather read it right now. If mm-hmm. I'm even curious, I'd rather read it right now at the same moment. If you build more time into those steps by saying, first send a letter, then I'll tell you if I want to see three pages. Then you send three pages, and I say, okay, I want to see 10 more. As soon as you start doing that, the chance of losing the attention over time, each time your package comes in again, it waits in line again. So I still advise authors, send what you think that agent needs to read to make an informed decision.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't want to read it, they won't. They're still going to reject it. But
right.
if they do want to read it, they're going to read it right then and there when their interest is highest and when their focus is there. So the chances are much better they will act on it. So I don't mind, you know, what an author wants to send me. I still am only going to read what I either want or need to read to know what I'm going to do. I don't like, none of us will take the attachments online because we're not going to open any attachments from people we don't know.
Right.
But I would also just caution, a lot of people are emailing queries because it's very easy. And I would only add that it's just as easy to decline. It's very, I didn't even have to open an envelope.
Right.
I didn't have to read a letter. I didn't have to think about this as a person. Online, when getting an email saying, you know, here's who I am and here's the book I'm writing, you know, it takes me 2 seconds to hit reply and say no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
It's too easy. It's just too easy. If I'm having a hairy day, if I have a headache, if something went wrong on a deal, I'm cranky, I'm rejecting everybody. You know, quite frankly, I just want everybody to get out of my way. So you don't want to make it that easy for me. I just think that's the common sense of it. Send it. Make me open an envelope. Make me read it. Make me look at it. And make me write something back to you, even if I'm declining, because I will have to think about it in the process.
Now, what if they do send you a letter in an envelope without an SASE? How do you feel about that? I know some agents who say, I just throw it away. I'm not going to spend a stamp on getting back to
you. Most agents really do toss it. And I toss some of them because if it's a combination of someone who I think was basically illiterate in the letter, they were illiterate to begin with and got my name wrong and didn't enclose an SASE, I'm throwing it away.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a really professional letter and they just didn't have the envelope, I do send it back to them. I do use an envelope and I just pay and send it back.
Mm-hmm.
And I often remind them, you do need to enclose the SASE. A lot of people say, well, you know, well, a lot more people, let me put it that way, this is increasing, where at the end of the query letter it says, you need only contact me if you are interested. If I don't hear from you, I will assume you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't want to pay the 34 cents. That's legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just throw it away.
Sure.
It feels weird because I'm used to actually responding. So it's strange not to. And some of them just put their email and just say, you can just email me your answer. And I just caution people about this email. It's too easy. It's just too easy. So, and the other common sense thing, it's a little late now, but I really don't think that authors should be querying in December. Because by the end of the year, we're really pressed about now. And we're trying to wrap things up. We're trying to close contracts before editors all bail. Things, and especially this year, things are even more precarious. You know, after 9/11, things are a little screwed up. And so I keep looking at all the stuff coming in, thinking, what would possess an author to query me in December when I'm at my crankiest? You know, because it will be even harder to get my attention right now because I'm just trying to clear things out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, for common sense, would say go from November and then wait till January. Just skip December. It's not a constructive time to be querying agents.
That's funny.
But you know, don't you think it makes sense?
It does make sense. I mean, everybody, you know, in general is pressed in December. And so I would think, yeah, agents, of course. Leave them
alone.
This
would be the worst time. Exactly. And, you know, there are common sense human elements. You know, there's a human perspective on this. And I think if authors just realized from a common sense point, this probably isn't a good time. Or people who queried right after 9/11. I'm just thinking, well, what do you think I'm going to do with this? I'm just going to get rid of it. You know, because we can't think about this right now.
Right.
And so common sense goes a long way to helping yourself if you're careful. And the other thing is everybody gets hexed by the query letter. You know, it's easier to write the whole book than it is to write a query letter. And I think you just have to be personable and I just want the author to be very straightforward and professional and just talk to me on the page. Tell me what it is you have to say. Tell me about why you need to write this book. How did this come about? If I can understand who you are and what you've been doing and how this book fits into that and why you're dedicating your efforts to this, I'm paying a lot more attention even if I disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But when it's very canned and very bottom line, here's the summary, it's a novel, here's what it's about, blah, 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 I have never written anything, have nothing published, are you interested in representing me? Well, how could I be? You haven't given me anything to go on. Or if it's a nonfiction book and your background is finance or whatever, but now what you're sending me is a book that's history. And I'm thinking, well, why? Why is this of interest to you? Is this a hobby? Do you have any real expertise here? You have no credentials in this. Why are you writing this book? So, of course, if you don't tell me any of that, I'm just rejecting it right there.
Mm-hmm.
I need a logic to this. I need the author to give me enough information to legitimately engage me, at least in the discussion about it. I'm much more likely to give information then. Does this make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. Well, it's that, you know, like you said, seeing somebody on the other end of the letter, you know, an agent with a life.
You have to picture a person.
Right. And sometimes I notice in my classes, students will write query letters that are very stiff and formal and mm-hmm. try to say, loosen up. This is a person you're writing to who, you know, has a family and has to, you know, pay bills
exactly.
and likes to have fun and have a good time here.
Exactly. And just talk to me as though we were actually having a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you would tell me if we were sitting there having a cup of coffee and I said, so what is your book about? And you just start telling me. Tell me those same things. Tell me what drives you in this and why it's so important. I'm much, much more likely to pay a lot of attention to that.
You are listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM in Irvine, California. My guest is Lori Harper of Sebastian Agency in St. Paul, Minnesota. We have a few minutes left, and I'm curious about trends and what you see happening, changing. Are they predictable? Do you just, again, especially since 9/11, have things changed remarkably?
Yes, we've really had a drastic quarter here, and the publishing news has been very, very bad. Newspapers have been, you know, banning this about, you know, like the sky is falling, and certainly publishing has gone into a collective, you know, holding of our breath at the moment, and we really do need, like, everyone to give someone a book for Christmas. We need book buying to pull through this holiday at least decently. Because right now, going into the Christmas season, publishers are cutting lists and cutting advances, and money is very tight, and they're expecting the worst. Because right now what happened is that the reading public went to history, bin Laden biographies, anything to quickly educate themselves on this whole situation of the moment and anything about the terrorism or the Middle East struggle. And so all these other categories just stopped. And even some of the best-selling fiction took huge slumps, which shocked us. And it was like the whole country just stopped, like they did during the OJ trial. And this is all they're focused on. So we're not quite sure at the moment how each of the categories will come back. And then that was added to the whole year of the dot-com crashing and the whole stock market thing. And so business books, finance books, a lot of these other things just stopped or they've reversed. And now nobody's quite sure where to go. What are the next steps here? Where do we go next? So there are many, many book proposals from the writers who are listening that are all sitting out there ready with their proposals. And I would just say this is a very precarious time, moment in time. And we aren't going to really know the mood and the tempo and how everything's going to pick up again until like February, March. I'm really hoping if we have a decent, not even excellent, just decent Christmas book buying, publishers will sort of take a deep breath and come into January, February with a more positive attitude, ready to buy more things. Because right now, the editors will say, oh, sure, send it to me. That sounds interesting. But they won't make any decisions. They're just sitting there with piles of these mm-hmm. things that are all interesting, but they don't dare buy anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not sure what the public's going to buy. Are they going to get back to the health and nutrition books? Are they going to get back to, you know, any of the self-help psychology? I mean, where exactly are these book buying trends going to go in the 6 to 9 months? Are we going to all sort of come to terms with what's going on in the world and it's going to become daily life and then everybody's going to go back to buying what they did or not?
Yes.
And I don't really think anyone knows at the moment. All we know is that most of the categories, other than the history and geography and bin Laden things, and most of those are just not doing anything at the moment.
Hmm.
And so I think if you're sitting with the proposal or it's near ready, really watch your timing on this. Don't waste, it's kind of like wasting bullets, you know, don't waste the bullets. Hold on to it and keep watching the market. Talk to the booksellers that are in your area and watch the headline stories about, you know, publishing, because the New York Times, the Post, the, you know, Wall Street Journal, a lot of them, LA Times, certainly are covering the mood of the moment in that. And as that starts to change and pick up, then everybody's going to have, you know, much more of an open shot again. And agents react in kind to the publishers. So when the publishers stop, then we tend to do the same thing. Now we're thinking.
mm-hmm.
And so the next couple of months are actually very critical to seeing if we're going to have an entirely new direction. The only thing I was very glad to have knocked out of the ballpark with this was all these media sort of pop culture, you know, Britney Spears writes poetry kind of books. You know, I was just really delighted that those got kicked out, and I hope they don't come back. But but meanwhile, we're waiting to see on these other categories, and we're waiting in carefully.
Oh, there's so much more we could talk about. So much more, and we must go. And it's just been a great delight having you.
Oh,
I think you've been most helpful and charming and witty and thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Barbara.
You're welcome.
Take care.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Lori Harper, literary agent in St. Paul, Minnesota, with the Sebastian Agency. You can find her in the resource books, Jeff Herman's Writer's Guide, and she's a good one. No commentary today, no time. We have basketball. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett on 88.9 FM. You can go to my website at writersonwriting.com, and you can listen and tell your friends in other places to listen to the show and all shows here at KUCI through going to the KUCI website at kuci.org. Again, you're listening to Writers on Writing. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening.